Pamela from Pine Hill. You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Rachel Ann Margaret Schulman. Camper Hudson Dinner is returned. Come one and come all. Community Dinner is back at Camper Hudson on Tuesday, September 5th at 5:30 p.m. at our Solaris Building at 360 Warren Street, Hudson, New York. Come and experience our community. Meet new people and old friends over a fresh prepared meal. With locally sourced vegetables that made by local volunteers. We'll be glad to see you there. Please bring a friend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to Ginger Radio Hour. I'm Justin Maiman. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. I'm live in the Acra studio. Today is Tuesday, and it's going to be hot. This wonderful music that you hear underneath is Jamie Branch, the track Simple Silver Surfer from Fly or Die 2 Bird Dogs of Paradise. We're going to hear the whole track, but first I wanted to tell you about what's happening today on Ginger Radio Hour. My guest is Viola He. They're a Wave Farm resident, an artist, a musician, a coder, an all-around wonderful human being. And I had a chance to talk to them last week, along with media theorist Natasha Chuk. All of that is coming up. We have a wonderful conversation, 20 plus minutes, plus There's a whole sound effects bit. All that is coming up in a little bit. This is Ginger Radio Hour. Keep listening.
Thank you. Make it sweet.
That, of course, is Tonto's expanding headband, the track Zero Time. You've heard that here before, not that track, but that band. They, of course, Malcolm, Cecil, and Robert Margolef made the first and still the largest multi-timbral polyphonic analog synthesizer in the world. I have that written down. I can't say that off the top of my head. But the Tonto synthesizer, as it is known, of course, was very important in those 1970s Stevie Wonder albums. The Tonto synth actually lived in Saugerties for a while and currently is still playable in a music museum in Calgary. Okay, enough history. Before that, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five with the track Scorpio. I'm going to play one more song before we get into our interview with Viola He. So I'll see you in one moment.
My pal's name is Footfoot. I never find him home.
I go to his house, knock at his door. People come out and say, Footfoot don't live here no more. My pal Footfoot always likes to roam. My pal
Footfoot
now he has no home. Where will Footfoot go?
What will Footfoot do?
Oh Footfoot, I wish I could find you.
I've looked here, I've looked there, I've looked everywhere. Oh, Footfoot, why can't I find you? Footfoot, where can you be?
Footfoot, why won't you answer me?
Footfoot, oh, Footfoot,
wherever you are, I want you to come home with me. I don't have time to roam. I have things to do. I have to go home.
Oh, Footfoot, where are you? Have a place to dwell. Footfoot, please answer me. I know where you are. You're behind that tree.
Footfoot, please come to me. Footfoot, now that you're here, won't you come home?
Footfoot, promise me this, that you will never again roam.
That was the Shags, My Pal Footfoot. I was inspired to play that in part by the phrase improv, which my next guest brought up a lot in our conversation. Last week, Viola He, a Wave Farm resident here on the campus of Wave Farm and WGXC, was working on a project. The project is called Quiet and Sometimes Silent. And Viola's going to do all the work to explain the work they were doing here last week, which included... Uh-oh. The phone is ringing. Let's see if I can answer that. Stand by. This is GXC. Good, I'm sorry. We're on the air right now. Can I take a message? Okay, can I take your name and I'll have him get back to you? Excellent. Somebody will get back to you today. Thank you. Okay, bye. Well, that is live radio. I just took what sounds like a pretty good chance of a donation. We will get back to him. So, Viola, he was here working on this project, which we got to take a look at. It includes a wearable element and frequencies and radio adjacent things, and it was pretty incredible. Viola will give you the lowdown on it here in one moment. The best way I thought to describe Viola was they're a teacher, an artist, a musician, a coder, a dancer, a comedian, a flaneuse, more on that in a second, and a current Wave Farm resident. Last week, we sat down in this very studio to pre-tape a conversation, and I was joined by the media theorist, Natasha Chuk, who added so much to this conversation. Thank you, Natasha. And let's just go in so that we can get back to Anthony, who maybe will become a member of Wave Farm and WGXC. So here we go, the conversation with Viola He.
It's crazy because I feel like
both of you are hearing things that I'm not hearing as much.
Ah, that's better? So much better.
So much better.
It wasn't bothering me as much, so I don't know if your headphones
It's just like a lot of ambient.
Yeah.
Oh now it's better.
What just happened? I just knocked over.
That's all right. Just leave it. We'll get it later. Okay. Leave it. We'll get it later.
Plastic things, though, so if I hit them, they'll make a sound. Okay.
Everything makes a sound.
Yeah, okay.
Ah, well, let's start there.
Ah.
That is a great place to start.
I know. What do you mean?
No, I just feel like when you are, like, actually hearing so many things, like, make sounds. I was just talking to Galen the other day. Like, I feel like I didn't grow up to be, like, super sound sensitive. But then when I was younger, when I was in high school, I did an internship at this place called Dialogue in the Dark. And they're an NGO started in Germany, but they have this like branch in China, and I interned there. So basically what they do is that they have these rooms that are completely dark, like pitch dark, and the NGO hire people who are like hard to see, and those people are like acting as guides. So they will guide people through these experiences where like you will hear things, smell things, and some of them are like more like experiences. So it's like, oh, you're walking through a city and these people will guide you through different parts of a city and you have to navigate. And some of them are more like group exercises where like you have to like build a rope castle together, or you have to like find something in a bucket of other things. So it's like a team building experience. But like when you're immersed in the pitch dark environment for long enough, you start to hear things that you wouldn't normally hear, and like everything gets so much clearer because one of your senses got taken away from you, and it's a big one. Everything is like, I feel like for people who do have vision, visuals are like such a big prominent sense. But like once that is taken away from you, I think every other sense becomes so much clearer. And I think that's how I started to hear. Being there for like a whole summer was just like in the dark a lot. And it's kind of crazy because I feel like I should be less scared of the dark after it, but I wasn't. I'm still really scared of the dark, but I think somehow it gives me the ability to listen to things more clearly.
Absolutely. We live in a visual culture, so clearly this is like a sense that's not just important, but essential
yeah.
in our daily life. We build everything around seeing and being able to see and negotiating, compensating for that if you can't see. So it's really interesting that the title, I want to start with that because it, quiet and sometimes silent is a really beautiful, poetic title, but it's also interesting to me. I guess I want to hear from you how you define silence when everything makes a noise, including our own bodies and our own breathing. And
I feel like a lot of times silence is just like what we filter out and what we keep within us. Because, like, as you said, like, even when we, what we describe as complete silence, it's not really silence. Like, over the past, like, 5 days I've been here, like, at night, everything was actually so loud. But, like, I could also be like, oh, I'm actually in complete silence, because, like, all these ambience, like, these room tones, I can automatically filter out. So, like, I am in silence in a sense that there's no human-made sound. But then there are animals, there are crickets, which are really, really, really loud at night. But you can also say that that's silence versus, you know, when we're in everyday life and there are, like, a lot of machinery noises and human noises. But sometimes I can also be like, oh, I'm actually also in silence. Like, I work in a makerspace and there are all these, like, machine sounds around me. And, like, as days goes by, you start to filter these things out as well. And I think a lot of times for me, what I would define silence would just be, like, without talking. Without talking sounds, a lot of times I think it's just silence.
That's really interesting. That's because that's listening as well, right?
Yeah.
It's also like a state of mind.
Yes, exactly. Because, yeah, we're not in complete silence. Mm-hmm. So it's just about how you see and hear things.
You're interested in music and performance, but also being in proximity with others and thinking about distance and relations and remote interactions and body language as a form of communication. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think I feel like my work is, like, a little bit all over the place. I think a lot of them are sound adjacent or, like, communication adjacent, but they're not, like, necessarily, like, the same senses, which is, like, what I wanted to explore here. So what you describe, quiet and sometimes silent, is the proposed project that I come to Wayfarm with, which actually has nothing to do with sound, which is, I think, why I use that title, because it's about radio communication, but it's not really sending sound to and from each other, which I think for people who, like, are not really familiar with, like, radio or just transmissions are in general, it's a little bit of reversing the expectations, because when people talk about radio, this is what we think, right? People on the radio talking to each other. But my project uses this technology called LoRa, and it's short for long range. This is something I've been researching since last year. So basically what this technology does is it sends signals from these hobbyist frequencies. So you can actually choose what frequency you used. I think I wrote on my thing it was 433, but I'm actually using 915. But these are all, like, just, like, little pockets of hobbyist megahertz, 950 megahertz. And these are all just, like, hobbyist radio frequencies where people can use for free. So LoRa kind of just, like, take really good advantage of that. What people usually use LoRa to do are, like, mostly IoT kind of stuff. So IoT is short for Internet of Things. So people, for example, if you want to, like, monitor water level at a relatively close situation, but it's like, oh, you're indoors, but then the water is outside. So you will put a sensor there and sporadic it will give you data. Because LoRa can transmit really small packets of information. So it doesn't really, it's not really suitable for sending videos or sound, unless you, like, really compress them and encode in a certain way, then you might be able to, like, send. I think people have made, like, walkie-talkie or, like, attempted to with it, but I haven't found really good documentation in, like, actually transmitting sound. Most of times it's transmitting, like, data information, like, very, very small packets of numbers to and from each other. So what I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, it's actually a really good way to do off-grid communication with, because it doesn't really have to use Wi-Fi or cellular or any, like, existing superstructure. It's a standalone thing by itself, and it uses these frequencies that people don't really utilize a lot in daily life. So there's also not a lot of interference. So when I came here, I was, like, testing the range, and it can go really far. On paper, I think it can go 10 kilometers, which doesn't really happen, but I think it can still go a pretty fair distance at Wayfarm, or anywhere that's more, like, flat. It doesn't do elevation really well, and it doesn't do, like, interference really well. So if there's, like, concrete buildings in between, it's a little harder. So this is actually a perfect place to test that. So what I did with my little devices were, it records rotational information. So rotation accelerometer on three axes, and it also records the signal strength. So I kind of know where the other person wearing my device was turning around, and then kind of like how strong the signal is, which kind of indicates how far they are, but not quite. So it doesn't really record where they are specifically, but kind of like the ambience information that they are carrying with them as we were communicating to each other. So it's this kind of like ambient poetic communication of just like having a presence of someone, but not surveillance.
Sure.
You know, I'm not actually recording where they are.
Right. You're not recording, analyzing, collecting it and analyzing it, using it for something else.
Yeah.
So it's just happening in the moment. It's ephemeral.
Yeah.
Right. So it's very performance oriented in that way.
Absolutely.
And how does it manifest? Like, how do you experience the signal of another in this exchange?
Yeah. So I made these headpiece, which right now it's not fully functioning yet because I'm experiencing some technical difficulties. But in my proposal, or like in my kind of like different segments of the piece, what I'm expecting was having these like little headpiece of like flapping mechanisms where like when the other person changes, like your headpiece changes with them. I do have like one flapping mechanism that I already implemented, and it works really well. It's like super subtle. So it's kind of like when someone gets near you, like the thing like flaps around you. And I'm also trying to make these like kind of like 8-bit computer situations where it interprets data in a very binary kind of format. So it changes and morphs in a very poetic way. And all of these are like very simple technology. I'm using muscle wires, which is shape memory alloy. So it's kind of just like this motor without like actually using a motor. It's just like, it's just this wire that shrinks when it's heat up. So when you give it a voltage, it just shrinks. So you can use that to actuate very simple like paper or like cloth, simple stuff. And the other stuff I'm using just like magnet and just like magnetic, what is it called? Electronic magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like very simple physics, almost going back to very low tech
mm-hmm.
solutions for these things, but they're very easy, nice way to visualize small data.
So what's it been like here? Like, how do you plan out your days? Are you like each day you're trying to figure out a new problem or overcome a new problem, or you're setting off and testing various parts of this?
Yeah, I think this is kind of how I usually approach my projects in general, but this is the first time I'm having like a dedicated time and space to do these. I'm pretty much a workaholic. I can like just sit down and work for a very long time. So I kind of try to, because also being here, I'm very much a city person. So I'm like used to being able to like just go out and grab a bite and come back, but like I can't really do that here. So I'm kind of like planning out every day, like, I have to cook every meal, which is really nice. And I'm like, after sunset, there's also not much to do. So like sometimes I can work till very late, or sometimes I get really sleepy once the sun is set. And so I kind of have to plan around the natural flow of things. But yeah, I usually have different parts of the stuff that I'm working on for the first, I think the first 2 days I was here, I was mostly dealing with programming stuff. So I was just programming a lot, trying to, so when you receive these packets, I was trying to understand the data format that I'm storing them, and how I can parse them, and then how I can use them as an output. So like a lot of that was just happening. I think I wrote like maybe 200-400 lines of new code just in the background. So I did a lot of that, and then like I spent maybe a day or two figuring out the physics mechanics of things. So how much voltage does the shape memory alloy need? How much contraction it can make? I made a lot of different swatches with different materials just to test how they can shrink and contract in different ways. And that's when I realized that I needed some transistors, because the microcontroller I was using doesn't provide enough amperage to actually drive them. Because when I tested them, I was using batteries and that worked. But when I used a microcontroller, it gives 5 volts, but it doesn't give enough amperage. So I needed something else that I couldn't get here. So I think a lot of it is just like kind of adapting as things go. And I did 2 sessions with people that came just as range testing, and also just kind of like see how they feel when they were holding my device going to the wild, and then like sending and receiving data as they go. So I did some sessions with people with like that, which was really nice.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, especially because you've been out here in the wild, as you called it, the, the openness of the wilderness here, the forest. And you talked a little bit about, say, the noises you're hearing at night, the cicadas, the tree frogs, and how that relates to networks being natural. Like, networks are natural. This is communication in general. Humans communicated before technologies that we have today, obviously, in very similar ways, but so do animals and insects and trees. Are there parallels there between the work that you're doing and how it's informing or informed by your environment here?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's so funny because I think before I came here, I also feel like it's a little ignorant of me to call this like wilderness, because I know it is not. But like, I grew up in cities all my life. I'm from Shanghai, and I lived in LA, and I lived in London, and I lived in New York. So it's always been like a very like cityscape for me. So even when I first started this project, a lot of the thoughts behind it was kind of networking in a very like urban life kind of way. And I feel like a lot of the context is very specific to urban living, you know, especially regarding like how COVID changed our behaviors in our lives. And I feel like for people, for folks, for example, who like lived out here, or people who have a more suburban way of life, or people who actually live in the wilderness, it probably manifests in different ways. But for me, it was like very specific to city living. And that's why when I first talked about networking, it was all about like the networks in the city, you know, like mutual aid in my neighborhood, or, you know, like the food drives or community fridges. Like, a lot of these are like city infrastructures that are specific to, you know, living in Shanghai or New York. And then I came here and I'm like, oh, it's a very different way of life for me. But then like, yes, thinking about networking in a very natural way, because, you know, I feel like networks are just like node to node, right? It's a graph of relations between humans, or more than human beings, that are just like node to node, you know, like how animals communicate to each other, you know, like how insects communicate to each other, how birds migrate in different seasons. These are all small networks that, for me, it's like these are something that I will never understand because I'm not an animal expert. But just like being out here and then like hearing all these sounds at night, and then like seeing all these animals in their natural habitat and like coexisting with me, makes me think a lot about just like human and more than human way of living. And I think a lot of the books that I read before, you know, like Mushroom at the End of the World, like all these things, I think makes a lot more sense for me, simply as I like immerse myself more. And I feel like I think a lot of city folks romanticize what it's like to be in the wild, I guess. People are always like, oh, you know, like I'm so miserable, all my problems will go away if I go into the woods, if I hike the Appalachian Trail, which I've also had this phase. I'm like, oh, if I just go on a big hike, or if I live in the huts, all my problems will go away. But I feel like it's not really that. It's not simple as that, because like the nature is not here to serve us. The nature is here as it is. And it's, you know, it's an ecosystem, and like, how do we fit into this ecosystem? And it's not just like, oh, I just need to go into the woods and everything will be fine. I don't know if this answers your question.
No, for sure. You become a node in that network, right?
Yeah.
And you can feel it when you're in a place like this that feels very isolated. This campus feels isolated enough from things.
Yeah, absolutely. To feel
that. Yeah.
Have you walked around here at night at all?
Yeah, I did. It's actually a little scary. This is why I thought about the internship experience, because I was like, I thought after that I would be less scared of the dark. And I guess I am less scared of the man-made dark. But I think the first or second night I was here, because I was here, I think the first 3 days I was completely in isolation. Like, nobody came, not including like Galen or Tom. I was kind of just here alone. And at night I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go out there and test the range of my thing. So I walked. I think I walked maybe like not even like 400 meters. And I'm like, this is so scary. I don't really know what I'm walking into. And that was when I was like holding my phone and my device and a flashlight. So I thought I was like equipped. But I think it's just like the idea of the unknown, of like not really knowing what I'm walking into. And they also told me about ticks, which I've never experienced in the past. So I'm like, oh my God, this is actually really scary.
Ticks at night, especially.
No. Yeah. Yeah. So I got scared a little bit. So I kind of just restricted myself in the pond area and I never really went beyond that. This is like one of my goal or like my checklist before I leave is that I kind of want to at least walk up there at night by myself. Which I still need to work up the courage to do so.
You've walked the path during the day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you're at least familiar with the terrain and generally the path.
Yeah. I know where the path is, and I feel like I'm pretty comfortable navigating in daytime now. So I think I'm not scared of getting lost. So I feel like this is why it's so irrational, because I think the nature, you know, like it puts you in awe in a sense that it kind of like strip away your senses and you're in this like trance state of like, oh, I feel paralyzed because I'm so small and this is so big and
it's sublime.
Yeah, I know, and it's like so beyond me, and you're like looking to this void and like knowing that it's not really a void, but you still just cannot walk past there.
I really like this description of the man-made dark versus, of course, the natural darkness. Because again, it's a matter of degrees. It's a little bit like what we talked about with regard to silence. What you're familiar with, what you're able to filter out yourself or filter in, and your own understanding of darkness and the degrees to which you can navigate through darkness.
Yeah.
And the man-made dark feels more controllable, obviously, because at any moment, if you panic, like lights can be turned on or... it's just
also
an interesting way of thinking about that.
But when you talk about it like that, like the man made dark, like that makes it even scarier in many ways to me, right?
Like the patriarchal dark.
Yeah. Like what is
the
he
darkness
done?
Of the humanity?
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't say man made. I usually say human made. But
what has he made? Yeah.
Well, what has he made? That's a whole other.
Who makes the darkness?
Right. Who's controlling this darkness?
Yeah.
So that is our conversation with Viola Hee. Viola has an incredible website, which I want to make sure I tell you about now. Of course, there'll be links to this in the show notes, both on WGXC and on my Tumblr, Ginger Radio Hour Tumblr. But that website is VIOLAND.XYZ. Check it out. Lots of incredible work there. Also, I checked in with Viola last night and asked them, so did you overcome the fear of the dark? And Viola said after our conversation, they were a bit inspired to go back out there. And they did. And Viola said, quote, "The forest was so loud and so quiet at the same time." Unquote. Pretty wonderful. Thank you so much to Natasha Chuk. She's a media theorist and writer. And she's already written a piece and published it on the Institute of Network Cultures blog. It's all about Viola's work. And you can check that out if you just search Institute of Network Cultures blog. The piece is called The Power of Small Hidden Networks. And I'll also have a link to that in the show notes. And then finally, thank you to Galen, Joseph Hunter, the executive director of Wave Farm, for putting this all together and making sure Natasha and Viola and I all got connected. But that's not all. Later on the show, Viola and Natasha discover noisemakers. But first, let's listen to some Bjork.
Yes. our feet marching, grinding skeptics into the sun.
That was Pixie Kills covering the Bjork track, Venus as a Boy. That song first came out in 1993 and has inspired dozens and dozens of covers. But that was by the band Pixie Kills. Before that, Bjork covering Bjork, the track Earth Intruders. You're listening to the sounds of Emily Sprague right now. The track is Huckleberry from Emily's Mount Vision album. I thought it was a good way to go out. Before we get to the Noisemakers, you've been listening to Ginger Radio Hour. I'm Justin, and every first and third Tuesday of the month, we're live here on WGXC 90.7 FM in the ACRA studio. I want to thank again Viola He. Viola is a Wave Farm artist in residence for 2023. And if you go to wavefarm.org, you can see all the tremendous work of these residents, but also meet them. There's a whole bunch of them. Go to wavefarm.org, learn more about the resident artists, all the things that are happening here. So let's get to some Noisemakers. Thanks again for listening. Thanks, Viola. Thanks, Natasha. Thanks, Galen.
That'll be the end of the set. It's just like a bunch of these. And you can like really like modulate them.
Yeah. Oh, no.
What's the long? Yeah.
So today I'm here.